Conflict. Isn't it the worst? Whether it's with a team member or a coworker, maybe it's that relative that you know is going to make a dig at you over the holidays. Regardless of when or where it happens, conflict is something that we all have to deal with. My guest today, Jen Whitmer, doesn't necessarily love conflict, but she loves helping coach people through it. She has given me a ton of amazing ideas. She's infatuated with the Enneagram and is as big of a lipstick junkie as I am. You're going to love this chat. And at the end of the episode, Jen also has a special gift for Squad Life listeners. Welcome to Squad Life, a podcast where you'll learn how small town girls like me are fearlessly going after our dreams. I'm Crystal Blinn, entrepreneur and social selling leader. Each episode, my squad and I will give you insight on how to pursue your big idea, live a life of joy, and step outside of your comfort zone. Let's get started. Jen, I am really excited to have you here today because I have been following along on your Instagram account, and you have been posting some really intriguing things about conflict resolution and words to say and working with teams and maybe even family members. And I think that is all very useful and intriguing because I think we all have conflict in our life.
Oh, yeah.
But before we dive too much into that, tell me a little bit about yourself and your background, because you grew up in one of my favorite cities.
Oh, Kansas City is a pretty great place. So I grew up just outside of Kansas City in what was once a small suburb and is now a large suburb of Kansas City. My dad grew up in that town when it was really small, and my mom was actually a dairy farmer's kid from Connecticut. So I had this interesting rural suburban growing up period out in Kansas City.
I lived just north of Kansas City in St. Joseph shortly after college, and I loved going down there. I love being on our farm, but I always said that if I had to live in a city, it would be Kansas City.
Fun. I really like it.
But life has taken you some other places since then.
So I have four kids with my husband. We grew up together in Kansas City and decided to do some traveling. And we left Kansas City and started a church here in St. Louis and moved here. And I was a teacher and he finished college and started working in advertising and marketing for him. And I taught and was in education for about 20 years, moving from the music classroom into administration. And along the way did several different, you know, degrees because teachers are ever learners. And recently in the last 3 years have moved out of education so I could have really a broader reach, but in the sense of so I can help more people. I really loved leading faculty and enjoyed helping them help students, and enjoyed that aspect of my job a lot. And so I've been branching out into helping other people and teaching them in a way that's just different and broader than I used to.
And by teaching them, a lot of that is coaching individuals. I know that's how you and I met, was coaching more through a group aspect with an agricultural group that I'm involved in called Common Ground. I mean, is that what your day-to-day looks like, is working with people on what would the subject be that you would cover?
So most of the subjects that I cover are related to conflict resolution and conflict resolution and how we communicate and conflict resolution in teams and how that helps your leadership. What I've learned along the way is the skills that some people often call soft skills. I have a real problem calling them soft skills because those types of skills, how you understand and communicate with people, are the number one predictors of emotional health and quality leadership, all of those things. The research continues to come back with those types of skills are the valuable ones, even more than, you know, if you know how to input numbers. And so you have to understand those types of things, but you can get trained at different places to do whatever organization organization needs you to do, but how to communicate, how to resolve conflict, and how to be a better leader, those things are the skills that you take with you and what you get hired for. So it's been really fun to help people one-on-one and do speaking events where I can help teach people these types of skills that really improve their workplace and really improve their personal relationships as well.
I often see that poor communication is the catalyst for disagreements, for lack of understanding. And I think sometimes that comes down to people thinking they're a good communicator, but really they aren't. So how do you know if you're a good communicator or if that's an area that you really should be working on?
I think everybody can be a better communicator.
That's a great way to put it. I agree.
Yeah, I mean, you can be a great communicator and still get better, because here's the thing. Every single person is different and we all see the world differently. We all have different background experience. We have different cultural influences. We have different days. So what may work on one day doesn't work another day, because it's just maybe that day was a good day and this day is a bad day. And we all have different influences. And that's what makes people so fascinating, is when you're helping them, you can always get better at, oh, this, I need to read this, I need to adjust, I have to be flexible. And so those are the types of things that people may be really great communicators in one setting, but then you have to move that skill to another person or another workplace or another culture. And then you have to relearn a few things. The basics are still there, but you have to relearn the different people that you're working with.
Do you figure out if you are a good communicator or if you should be a better communicator by getting feedback from others?
Absolutely. So I think a couple different things can help you say, do I need to work on my communication skills? There's a couple things. Asking for feedback from other people, and there's a couple different ways to do that. You can just ask the people around you, say, do you think I'm communicating okay with you? What could make that better? And just ask people straight out. Some people like to do an anonymous assessment. If you're really into data and that kind of thing, you can send out an anonymous survey, especially if you're in a position of, you know, like beginning leadership, or you're on a team and you want to move up. You can send an anonymous survey and ask a couple questions about your communication, and you get pretty honest feedback when you ask people anonymously. So I think those are two good ways to know if you need some help. And internally, that's where the self-awareness piece of leadership is really important. And you can ask yourself, how do I know if I'm a good communicator? Am I constantly frustrated because people don't understand what I'm saying? Am I consistently running into the same communication pattern that several people keep telling me the same thing? Then that's usually an indicator of something you need to work on and figure out how to adjust. It may be your personality, which I would never want to deny somebody, like how you operate, but you can always adjust how you operate. It doesn't mean you're selling yourself out, but like, oh, if this person needs this from me, I can change. I can change the way I say this, or I can change the way my body language communicates in this way, or how I approach them. So I think those are three really good ways of knowing if you need to work on your communication skills.
What about with your kids? Because that must be an interesting dynamic, having a mom that is very experienced in communicating and is very experienced in helping others communicate better. How does that work in the family situation?
Oh, it's so funny, Crystal. So parenting, you can be an expert in anything and your kids probably aren't going to care. They're like, they just don't care. And so it means asking a lot of questions of my kids more than anything else. So I'll ask them a lot, what do you think about this? Or, hey, I'm noticing this is frustrating you. Would you like some help to make that better? Sometimes they say no. And so I'm like, all right, I'm just going to let you be, because sometimes our kids just have to really learn the hard way. That's the direct instruction piece of that. That's probably, I don't know, put a percentage on it, like a quarter of what parental instruction is. A lot of it is what they watch us do. So the way I communicate and model to them, I have a teenage daughter right now who is a new teen, and she is perfectly on brand for herself and then magnified by being 13. She just has always been full of life and emotions, and modeling for her appropriate expressions of emotions is takes a lot of patience, but that's a way that she begins to see how somebody can be angry, upset, frustrated, sad without losing self-control. Like you can still express an emotion and communicate an emotion clearly without hurting somebody or saying unkind things or those types of things. So we depend a lot in our parenting on them catching what we're doing because we're modeling what they're doing. And then we don't do it right all the time, but that's one of our main goals.
That makes a lot of sense. It seems like your daughter is very expressive with her emotions, but I think at some point, maybe as we get older, or maybe some people are like this more naturally, it can be easy to retreat from those uncomfortable situations and just say, I don't want to ruffle the feathers. I don't want to have the conversation. So I'm just going to back away. That's probably not a really good way to deal with conflict.
There are several different conflict responses. There's kind of three general categories that are unhealthy. And those are the ones that people have heard about before, where it's fight, flight, or freeze. Those are how we respond to negative stimulus in our, you know, from our brains. This is what we do. And so that flight response is one of those unhealthy responses. And so I like to say that's peace faking, where you kind of pretend that you're making peace by just moving things out and leaving the situation because I don't need to feel it. And that is what I like to say, putting lipstick on a pig. It's still back there in the back of your mind, causing all this havoc and squealing around and doing that. And it's not actually resolving anything. And it can be really scary to find a way to confront and a way to say, I'm having a problem with this. When this happened, this caused this. And that's a challenge for a lot of people. And there's a lot of wisdom in overlooking things. There is definitely, we do not need to confront every situation that comes our way. And I don't need to tell you that, you know, push your chair in every single time. And that's really a problem for me because, blah, blah, blah. You know, like you don't need to do that every time. But having some wisdom to know that, hey, is this a patterned behavior? Is this happening over and over again? Then that's a good time to say, hey, can we talk about something I'm noticing? If it is a break in a relationship, so something that has broken trust, like I said this to you, you said you wouldn't tell somebody else and you did. And that's breaking of a relationship. That's another good time to talk to somebody. And the third time is if something is dangerous, if they're causing real harm to themselves, to somebody else, or to the person who's wanting to talk to them. Those are the three times I always suggest, like, you want to have a conversation then. It's not good to overlook because then you're falling into this kind of flight category of denying that it's happening.
I really liked on your Instagram, you had that post that was peace faking. And it had these phrases that you talked about, oh, I keep the peace, or I'm above all mm-hmm. the drama. And I've heard people say that before. I don't like drama. I'm also a problem solver. So I probably naturally am okay with dealing with a lot of issues or problems head on. But sometimes I've been in those situations that it's just like, I find this easier to back away. However, mm-hmm. it then comes up in a couple weeks or a month. And then the conflict I find is so escalated that maybe if I would have just taken a minute and dealt with it, then we would have found the solution, or I don't know, just felt more comfortable about either side.
Yeah, there's different research in my study that I've said that if you don't handle a conflict within 2 days, you're not going to.
That's interesting.
I'm not sure if I totally believe that. I think for a lot of them, there are a lot of situations where if you don't bring it up within 2 days, it is unlikely that you're going to return to it. And that's kind of the impetus to going quickly to somebody like, hey, before and with what you've just said. So it doesn't become bigger. It doesn't fester. It doesn't become an escalation to adding more conflict, because conflict is like inertia. It just kind of flows and gets bigger and bigger and bigger unless something acts against that force. And so the snowball is going. And if you can stop the snowball at the top of the hill, it's a tiny little, you know, it's a tiny little thing. It's in your hand. You're like, hey, this is really a problem. I would appreciate if maybe you could try this the next time. Does that work for you? And you can have a conversation with somebody versus you get to the escalation of this ginormous snowball that fits three people in it. And all of a sudden it's an explosion in your office because, you know, somebody left the paper out on a copier, which wouldn't have been a big deal at the beginning. So that's why I always suggest that people go quickly. Not to say that you can't come back later, but it's just kind of you're unlikely to go back after a couple of days. And I think there's a lot of wisdom to that.
Dealing with conflict and all these suggestions, asking for feedback, that takes a lot of bravery.
It sure does.
This isn't easy stuff. It's very valuable, but it is not easy. I have seen you talk about Brené Brown a lot, who she, I think, is incredible. Brené Brown talks about the 8 seconds of bravery, and you reference that a little bit, and you think about it as you can change conflict in 8 seconds.
Yes. So she talks about those 8 seconds of bravery, and it's kind of these, I can't remember, I don't think Brené Brown is the way she says it, but it's like a sweaty hands conversation. There's like 8 seconds where you're like, oh, and in her research, she said that's how long it takes to get over the awkward. And so 8 seconds also in education, when I was training as a teacher, we talked about waiting for students for 8 to 10 seconds to really comprehend what you're saying. So in any conflict, if you're facing something, if you give yourself time to truly process what's going on. And I always suggest starting that with a breath, just literally taking a breath that fills your lungs. And that takes a second of time that pauses and can de-escalate any situation. And then the next step is really identifying how strongly are you feeling. Because sometimes it's too hard at first to say, this is what I am feeling, but you can label how strongly you feel it. And you can say, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is a 2. Okay, so I'm not actually that upset. Or on a scale of 1 to 10, this is an 8, and I'm really mad. And so then you can say, ooh, do I need to do something else? You can change how the conflict is going. If you know your emotions are so intense, you're likely to lose control, and then it not be helpful or healthy to continue the conversation at that moment. And then you can label, what am I feeling? So if I'm feeling at an 8, am I feeling angry at an 8? If I'm feeling hurt, sad, disappointed, what is the level, what is the emotion that I'm feeling? And then you can say, okay, I can pause and re-engage. Or you can say, you know what, I'm feeling a little out of control. Can we pause for about 15 minutes and come back and talk about this? Because I want to make sure I communicate clearly. And like you said, that's really brave. And because you're admitting that you're struggling, but it's also the appropriate, healthy way to communicate to somebody that you honor them and you want to have self-control and you want to enter in this conversation in a way that is recognizing both of us are humans and we both need to respect one another.
I am just envisioning families and groups of friends sitting around the table at Thanksgiving and Christmas and everybody taking that big breath after the subject of politics or your spending habits or relationships that you are or are not in, and everybody just taking, you know, those deep breaths to say, okay, what level am I on this scale and what is my next response going to be?
Yes. And it's okay. Like in our minds, we feel like it's this super long time because we're in a culture that can't have dead air. The sound has to be coming from the television or the radio. On satellite radio, if the DJ stops talking, you're like, is there something wrong with my connection? Immediately, like within a second. But in reality, it's not that long. And to slow things down, it's like, you know, in The Matrix, he slows down and he can see the bullet passing by. If you slow it down, you can really see what is happening in a little bit more accurate way. And it's actually not that long. So you're at the dinner table and somebody's like, so I see you bought the new car. You can, we did get a new car. I like that it has a new radio, you know, or whatever, you know, like you can engage in a way, you can make some choices about, am I going to be defensive about this? Or am I going to take this at face value? Am I going to play into this? Is this passive aggressive? You can make some choices.
Now, you also love the Enneagram. Like you don't.
I do.
There's so much talk about it lately. It's also a subject that keeps coming up on the Squad Life, but you are taking it a step further and actually getting, is certified the right term?
That is the right term.
So why are you so passionate about this? And for those that still don't know what the Enneagram is, what's the synopsis?
So the synopsis of the Enneagram is it is a way of categorizing how different people see the world. And it is similar but different than other personality typing systems. I've always been a personality typing junkie. When I was in junior high, I was a part of a peer mediation group. So it's been a while. I've been interested in conflict. I was a part of this peer mediation group, and we took like a quiz about what kind of listener you are. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And I've always loved that kind of stuff. You know, the quiz in the magazine, what kind of ice cream are you, or whatever, you know, like a good BuzzFeed quiz. I'll waste a lot of time right there. But so I've always been fascinated about how an external tool can help me understand more about myself. We all have blind spots. We all have things we cannot see. And so a tool helps give us a bigger picture of who we are. They're not foolproof. They're not exact, but they really give us great insight. And so when I was in college, I did a lot of work with a Myers-Briggs. I didn't end up doing Myers-Briggs certification, but just a ton of study and worked with some students with it. I'd heard about the Enneagram for kind of years, and it just seemed so much more complicated. And I liked my Myers-Briggs. But then I ended up reading a book about 3 or 4 years ago. And the way the Enneagram really honors how people grow and change, not just throughout their life, but even in the midst of circumstances throughout their day, was really interesting to me. In the Enneagram, it divides people into 9 different sections. And it's just the way that different people see the world. And they just give them numbers 1 through 9. And several people over the course of the last few hundred years have given different names to those types of people. But the main gesture is that everything is a number. And then there's all kinds of layers to the Enneagram. And so the reason I was interested in coaching people and getting certified is because I think so much in conflict is what we think is on the surface is what we're saying. But actually, there's an iceberg underneath that is playing into the conflict. It's playing into the conversation. And if you don't have self-awareness that that is impacting how you're approaching this conversation with somebody and you are blind to it, you have no power to counteract it. So, for example, my number has a core fear of not having enough. Like, I might not have enough. And I'm a 7, which is sometimes called the enthusiast. And so, but that enthusiasm comes from wanting to make sure I have all these great experiences to kind of satisfy this need of being enough. So if I'm in a conversation where someone's trying to limit me and I'm getting frustrated emotionally and I don't know why I'm getting frustrated, oh, they're trying to limit me. Is this limitation appropriate? Because there are plenty of limitations that are appropriate. I can then have some self-talk that is instructive, that is practicing self-control, and then I can still be in this conversation without having the emotions come into it.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and the emotions can derail things. Emotions are not bad ever, but they definitely can derail a situation when your logic or your emotions are not underneath kind of your self-control. So I wanted to help other people be able to do some of that work, and there's just layers and layers and layers to the Enneagram. There's just a lot of wisdom to help people recognize how they see the world, how you may see the world differently than me, and it's not wrong or right. I can say, I don't see it that way, and that's okay. And I'm really honoring who the other person is.
Now, if somebody wants to dive a little bit more into the Enneagram, because I see a million Instagram accounts and pictures,
oh, yeah.
And I mean, there's so much info out there. I mean, is there something that we should do that's maybe the more appropriate way to discover what our number is?
So there's a lot of debate, as there is with any kind of concept, and you know, people want to do it their way. But I personally think that the best way to learn your number is really reading about different numbers. One of the things people often say about the Enneagram is when you read the different descriptions, the one you don't like the most is usually you. Because it tends to kind of play it open a little bit. You're like, oh, how did you just read my soul? How did you know? And so it's the reading about it is really, really helpful. I think there are a couple tests out there, and they range from free to $15 or $20 or like $80. What's hard about the test is that the Enneagram is all about why you do something. What is your motivation behind that behavior? So the same behavior coming from 2 different people can look the same on the outside, but the why that they're doing it needs different addressing. And so the Enneagram being about the motivation is what makes the tests, I think, a little bit challenging. So the test is a great tool to include in reading about yourself. And there's lots of books out there. I think there are a couple people that are really accessible. The one that I recommend the most is called The Road Back to You. And it's super short and it has kind of checklists at the beginning. So it's not exactly a test, but here are kind of 20 phrases that describe a two. And here is what a three was like as a child. And those tend to really help you go, oh yeah, these mostly seem me. Because whatever typing system, you're not going to be that way 110% of the time. You're going to be that way most of the time. And so that's my best suggestion for people. And then to get a coach. There's so much out there that's really helpful, but then you kind of get stuck and you need a little bit of a coach to help walk you through that or just to hear you talk about it and then say, hey, have you thought about this? Oh, and then you have a little bit of a light bulb moment. And so I think those personal self-discoveries, spending, you know, 2, 3, 5 sessions with somebody can bring you so much awareness. You can then really apply the wisdom of the Enneagram into your daily life.
We talked a little bit about coaching with Marlene Eich in a previous episode. And one other thing that I wanted to dive in a little bit deeper on that, because, you know, a lot of the listeners, they might be in a 9-to-5 career. Some might work for themselves. Some might be focused on their family. I mean, do all three of those categories, are they candidates for coaching? Because coaching is an investment in yourself, right? You know,
absolutely.
I feel like you can read and read and read on the internet, but a coach, you are actually going to pay them for their services. Even if you're maybe not pursuing a career and you're more focused on a cause or a passion, I mean, does coaching, does it make sense for everybody?
I think if you have the means to invest in yourself in that way, it's valuable. Usually coaching isn't this commitment of 20 years. You know, it's not like you're going to be my coach for forever. It's not even a 2-year degree. You know, like you're saying, okay, I'm going to invest some time with somebody. And it's different than a therapist. It's a relationship that is a cheerleader. It's a relationship with somebody that's slightly different than a mentor that's cheering you on, but also the one that's going to say, why don't you try that again? Try it this way. And I in high school was a swimmer. So I swam in high school and college. And I mean, the amount of laps or just even by the side of the pool with the coach holder was like, nope, move your arm this way. Okay, try it again. Okay, come back. You did it this way, but now try to move your arm this way again. Okay. You know, and that's what a coach can help you do when it comes to role-playing how you might approach a conversation. I was coaching somebody the other day. They had to have a pretty difficult conversation with an employee. They got some feedback from a client and they needed to give this employee some feedback. And so we just spent 20 minutes like, say this, what about this? You might consider asking this question. And, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. And this is a pretty experienced leader. And when you have a coach, you are getting two people and greater than the sum of your parts in helping you. And a parent can help that. I mean, I'm always looking for somebody. My kids are, I have teenagers and a 10-year-old. And so of our 4 kids, I'm loving talking to people who are like have sophomores and seniors in college. They're just far enough ahead of me. They're asking me great questions and they're kind of my parenting coach. And I happen to have access to a couple of those in my life. But if you didn't, I would really consider paying somebody to talk to me about that. So I think that coaching aspect in your career, as a parent, even if you work for yourself, especially, because if you work for yourself, you don't have a ton of feedback. And you have a feedback if somebody's willing to pay you something, but they're not necessarily telling you why. And having a coach is somebody who's really on your side to cheer you on and help you course correct along the way.
I think we've forgotten how important practice is. I grew up showing cattle and we would be in the barn. I just don't even know how many hours practicing showing our animals and practicing just all the skills that you needed to be successful in 4-H. And then I danced for 13 years and I remember just practicing so much. And then I think at some point, grow up and we forget how important practice is. I, thinking back to this fall, I have had to have some difficult conversations. I was also trying to help my team work through something. And I felt like when it was time to have those conversations, it actually went really well. In the one situation, I typed out everything I wanted to talk about. I made my bullet points. I read through it. I really thought about, okay, well, what if the conversation goes this direction? Like, what would my response be then? You know, how can I really practice listening so that this person will open up and I can hear where she's coming from? In the other situation, I got on a call with one of my coaches and we practiced. Like, I practiced going through this presentation as if, you know, she was one of my team members. And so how would I present the information? How would I respond to her feedback? And they went so well. I was so nervous about these two different situations. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they actually could not have gone better because I practiced. And I think we forget about that, like when we are in these professional roles or when we're working with people, about how important it is to practice those skills and really, I don't know, just think about what we want to talk about or practice our approach. It's something I think we just don't think about as adults as much as that practice component.
Right. Well, I think you're exactly right. I 100% agree. And I think one of the things I would add is that sometimes people think that means you're not being genuine. If you've practiced, that means you're not spontaneous. And while I highly value spontaneity, there are times where spontaneity isn't kind. And like you said, I really wanted to listen to her well. I wanted to hear what she had to say. And so in order to care for this person well, to be kind, I wanted to practice. And so sometimes we don't think that practice is genuine when actually it's a really high form of caring. And some of that comes, I was also a performer. So my first job for 10 years, I was a music teacher. And I always told my kids, practice how you want to perform. Your parents don't want to see you up there scratching your knees. So we're going to practice the way we want to perform. And a performance is all about giving joy to an audience. And so when we're talking about a conversation and practicing self-awareness skills or practicing conflict skills, how I might phrase this, that's really giving something to the other person because you're caring about them. And that's how I think coaching is such a helpful aspect, because you can't necessarily practice with the person you're having a conversation with. That's kind of rare. So having an outside person who's confidential and could really help you is so valuable in making our relationships just smooth and peaceful.
I think that might be a mic drop moment. This is so good. Obviously it's been like in the back of my head, but this concept of practice, when you see people pull off an event or a performance or a speech flawlessly, those are the times when that person has actually put in, we don't see all the behind the scenes work. We don't see the hours and hours that have been put in.
There's an element of practice that, especially if you're learning a new skill. So say like your body language, you get feedback from somebody that says, I don't think you're listening to me because while I'm talking to you, you are always turned the other way and you're looking at your computer, or you're writing something down. So if that's a new skill you're trying to acquire, making sure people know that you're paying attention, you kind of have to practice that. You have to say to yourself, oh, I'm going to practice facing somebody. And I know that may seem juvenile to some people, but if you really want to learn it, you're going to practice. You're going to do it. And it really helps people to know that practice is okay. We live in an instant culture. It's not a new issue. We've been saying it for years. The internet has only exacerbated that issue. And so practice, like you said, is kind of a lost art. And it's so valuable.
Before we go into the speed round questions, I want to make sure that everybody goes to Jen's website. I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. It's jenwhitmer.com, because you have a bazillion resources on there. There's a whole section of like books to read. There's phrases that you can download for conflict resolution. Like, there's 100 million things. So I want to make sure everybody checks that out. So let's move though into the speed round. You already shared one of your favorite books. What's another book that you tell everybody about?
Oh, I mean, to just hop on the Brené Brown bandwagon, dare to lead. But if you are in any kind of leadership situation, I highly recommend The Advantage by Patrick Lencioni. That's always really great if you're in a leadership setting. And if you are looking for conflict resolution book, it's pretty dense and it's faith-based, but I think it's really good in talking about concepts, and it's called The Peacemaker by Kevin Sandy. So those are the kind of categories I would go for.
What's one thing that you will do to kind of wrap up the end of the year? Do you have any rituals or things that you do to close out every year?
A couple things. So my family's Italian, and we make these Italian cookies every year. And so we always make these Italian cookies for Christmas. That's always a big thing for us, and a tradition that no one is allowed to not do. And then our family, although we have a couple kids who they're not 100% on board, we often do a puzzle that we put out at the end of the year during Christmas break, and just it takes a week or two to finish it. But it just creates really fun, different combinations of our family. So there are six of us. The oldest three are 3 years apart. So we've got three kids in 3 years. So there's just a lot of dynamics happening. And the puzzle just gives us this great opportunity to be with different combinations of kids and kids with each other and siblings, or all six of us. And it's just the interesting conversations that come out of that. So those are some of our traditions that we do.
Last question. I am a beauty junkie. So what is a makeup product or something that you love, always have to have with you? Like, what's your one thing?
I can't give you just one. There are so many. So in a former life, I was a Lancôme freelance makeup artist. So I have a ton of, like, I'm with you, deeply love the beauty industry. So I'll give you the two lipsticks I always have around, because I know that you, Crystal, love lipstick.
I do.
And so I love Lancôme's Ooh La La and Beauty Counter's Sunset. And so those are the two that I like. They're very, very different lipsticks, but those are the two that I have. Pretty much I can fit them in my wallet, even if I don't take my whole purse. One of them is with me.
Jen, I think you might be the most interesting person that I have met. You've told me that you have pretty much had, I don't know, 15 different careers in your lifetime so far. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but this is just fascinating. I think you've probably seen every kind of situation there is out there.
Oh, there is no way I've seen that much. There's no way. There's so much more to do. There's so much more to do.
As we're wrapping up, you want to do something really fun for the Squad Life listeners. So tell them about your offer and also how they can stay in touch with you.
I love Crystal's podcast. All of y'all out there, you listening, I know you're getting so much great information from her. And I wanted to offer you some coaching. Well, normally when people subscribe to my newsletter, I give you kind of a reduced discount rate. So, but for Crystal's special people, if you go to my website, jenwhitmer.com/crystalcattle, there is a special buy one, get one free coaching offer. So you get two coaching, Zoom coaching calls with me for the price of just one. So I would love to help you out. And if some of you want to start now and we want to talk about conflict, or you want to talk about communication, we can really decide what you want to do. Or if you'd like to wait until January, you can do some Enneagram coaching. So it is up to you, but I would love to be able to help your audience have some self-growth. And then if you wanted to find me, I am Jen_Whitmer on Twitter and Instagram, and on Facebook, it's Jen Whitmer Speaks.
So this was so much fun, Jen. I am so glad that we were able to spend a little bit of time together today.
Me too. Me too. Thanks for having me on. Super fun.
Isn't she fun? Are you already practicing that speech in your head, that scenario, so you can confront conflict head on? Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Squad Life. Make sure that you share it with your friends, leave us a review or rating on iTunes. If you take a screenshot, tag me, Crystal Cattle. You can find all of the show notes by going to crystal-cattle.com. I can't wait to talk to you next week.